So, good afternoon, everybody. I was actually waiting for my convener to come back and get me the little microphone right here, but since you're all here and it's that time, I think I'll convene myself and get started for you all. It is the afternoon. My name is Sean Philpott, and I'm here with you today from Boston, Massachusetts, the Berklee College of Music. Berklee College of Music is a institution that enrolls about 4,200 students in the pursuit of degrees associated with both performance as well as music business topics. What I'm going to be talking to you about today is portfolio management, but more specifically, the approach that I've taken, that we've taken at Berklee to implementing portfolio management, which I've labeled a grassroots approach to implementing project portfolio management. At Berklee College of Music, I'm the Senior Director of Enterprise Systems. And in that role, I manage a IT group that's primarily responsible for the college business and collaboration systems. Just give a feel for what I do there. What we're going to cover today, What we're going to cover today is really, we're going to go over what I mean by this grassroots idea. We're going to talk a little bit about portfolio management. We're going to talk a little bit about process from the standpoint of both portfolio management as well as this grassroots approach. We're going to talk about the results we saw with that, and then we'll spend a little bit of time with questions and answers. So first of all, grassroots, you know, we're going to look at constructing that definition. It seems to be fitting with a grassroots approach. There's not really a single authoritative definition that I could find for a grassroots approach. So starting with that, thinking about that, what I try to do is find at least the origin of it. And while there's no single authoritative definition for grassroots approaches, there does seem to be some general consensus behind the fact that its origin came with this statement. This is one of the first uses of this statement out there by Albert Beveridge. This party has come from the grassroots. It has grown from the soil of people and necessities, of people's hard necessities. So what you see is a lot of things going on in here, and this is what I think we've all come to think of as grassroots, you know, people working together to try and achieve some kind of goal. What's interesting about this, a little bit of a side note, is as a senator, Albert Beveridge was really, really a really strong Federalist, and he really believed that a strong federal government was much better, you know, could do a much better job of managing affairs than the people. So while he's given credit for this grassroots statement, it's not necessarily in his belief system. But again, I'm not going to spend too much time trying to discredit Albert Beveridge, because, and this is really, really important, if you see me out tonight, right, keep in mind, I would never want, right, or I would never turn down a good beverage. So anyway, that's my lame joke of the afternoon. No more. So thank you. Anyway, so grassroots efforts, going back to this and the definition. I think they're goal-oriented, and I think that a lot of folks think that grassroots approaches are really just kind of spontaneous and come out of nowhere. But really, there's a desired outcome. Any of these efforts are made really with a goal in mind. There is something that somebody wants to accomplish, and that's why they're going into this approach. They're people-driven, so they're largely based on the efforts of individuals working in some sort of coordinated fashion. Low cost, so grassroots efforts are always seem to be associated with low cost. Again, seeming spontaneous. They're not big billboard or TV ad campaigns. Many small actions. So grassroots efforts characterized by a large quantity of small actions, people doing very specific things to help move something along. And this is almost, instead again, a big TV ad campaign or something like that, it's almost like that whisper storm. A whole lot of people engaged in getting something done. Engaging any of these efforts, there seems to be some kind of consistency in the fact that there's a premium is put on accessibility and inclusive. They tend to encourage identity and community. So I think this is the definition of a grassroots effort. And so just to test that I think this is right, I decided to try it out with this session a little bit. So I decided to try and run a quick little grassroots campaign with the goal of having people contribute to this session, either by participation or with content, really. So what I did, is first of all, I set a goal. So again, I said the first thing that we have here when you have a grassroots effort, set a goal. So I said I wanted to generate some content, and maybe by generating some content, I would draw people into the session. True story, I did a session a couple years ago at a different conference, and I got a little bit too creative with the title of the session. And so while I put a lot of time and energy into it, nobody knew what the title meant. So I had 7 people in the room. 3 of the people worked for me. So not what I wanted to see happen here today. So involving people. Thank you. This is a little bit more comfortable. Can you all hear me still? Is that all right? All right. So people, using my own contacts, I wanted to involve people in trying to help me reach out to people who could help generate that content. And then I also found something really cool. On the EDUCAUSE website, there's a list of attendees by session. So anybody can go on there and pre-register, you know, build your calendar and show, here's a session I'm interested in. And it's like, oh, there's a gold mine. There's some people I could reach out to. So I looked at that. Cost, I set myself a budget of $0. So we're going to do that. Actions. So what I did is I started out by saying, I'm going to just do a couple simple actions and see what I get as a response. So I made a survey on Google Apps. So that's free, right? And I decided I'm going to spend 40 actions. I'm going to do 40 things myself. So I'm going to email a couple people off that list. I'm going to email a couple of my contacts. I posted this on LinkedIn. I posted on the EDUCAUSE website. And I even did my first posting on Twitter, which was pretty exciting. And as an IT guy saying that, I've just labeled myself as a Luddite. But yeah, that's true. It was my first Twitter post. I made it easy. So there's only 2 questions on the survey. And I also made sure I posted it wherever I, you know, whenever I sent out a message, email, the postings, it was always right in there. And I used tinyurl.com and made, you know, a short, recognizable URL for this. So just try to make it really easy to use. And then inclusive, I said, you know what? If you do this, I'll share the results with you at this session or afterwards. So let's look at what happened. What were the results? Well, first of all, I got some direct contact. So people came right back to me and said, hey, this is, you know, I'm interested in this topic. Let's, you know, here's what I'm having trouble with, or here's what's worked well with me. So it opened up some discussions, which was pretty cool. Volunteer effort. This was pretty neat. I had one colleague actually take this session and actually post it out on a listserv. So I didn't do this. This person turned around and posted it somewhere else on my behalf. And then what I thought was really cool was that EDUCAUSE turned around and actually posted a Twitter post about this session with the survey. So that's not my account, that's their account. They did that. So in some ways, we're leveraging the credibility of those other organizations. So that was pretty cool. So here's the big thing. So what was my return on this effort? So I spent 40 actions. I got 56 survey results. Now, that may not sound like a big number, but if you consider what average response rates are for surveys and even responses to Twitter posts, that's actually a pretty significant number. And it shows that people beyond myself took actions to actually move this thing along. So I thought that was pretty cool. So how can we apply these ideas in our institutions with something like project portfolio management? They don't necessarily, you know, sound as exciting, or, you know, it doesn't seem like a fit. And then really, let's start with, why would I even be talking about that in the first place? So we're going to look at portfolio management and then show how we use some of those same things, goal, people, cost, to do this. So first of all, a few years ago, I'm in the situation, taking on this job. We're getting in tons of requests through email. I'm getting all kind, you know, I've got all these lists to sort through, the lists that, you know, of projects that people before me had made, lists of projects from other areas around the institution, lists of projects that I made myself, and these were all, you know, piled up on the desk. Then you're walking down the street, you run into people and say, hey, Sean, you know what I'd really like to have? I'd really like to have X. You know, it's actually funny about these ones. These are the ones, to me, that people seem to expect most to happen when they pass you on the street and just say, hey, you know what? This would be great. And then you're like, yeah, that would be great. And I think I just said yes, I was going to do it to them, you know? So anyway, we have this big strategic direction that the college released, and there's 34 specific objectives in this plan. Almost all of them specifically benefited through the use of technology. So that's another project list. And then there's always this one. There's the, in this case, man in the corner office who says, hey, Sean, I'd like you to do this. So this is my vice president of IT, and he has really great ideas. And when he has a really great idea, he likes to see it come to fruition. So there's always that one too. So this is the situation. But also what was going on is, knowing this, I'm saying to myself, I need a process. I need some way to manage it. And what I want to build, you know, looking at IT governance things out there and stuff, project portfolio management, that's the way to do it, right? So I want to build this. So I wrote up something that said, you know, here's what we're going to do. Here's the benefits. Here are the goals. I sat down with one of the senior leaders at the college and said, here it is. Check this out. This is what we need to do to get all of this chaos in control. And that person sat down with me, had a really nice lunch, and said, you know what, Sean, this is a really good idea, you know, and I think you should do it, as long as it doesn't apply to me. So that told me right there that I didn't necessarily have the support, the mandate from the college to go about building this, but I wanted it. So how do you do it? Well, you got to do it bottom up. Was anybody in here in the secret sauce session right before this? All right. Awesome thing. And, you know, what was it? Tracy was up there saying, yeah, we just put this in place a year ago, this new IT governance structure. And then it was Fred. And he's like, number one thing on, you know, you need to start your recipe is leadership support and project management skill. And it's like, oh my, yeah, that would be great, right? Didn't have it. So what do we do about that? So let's use that same process, right? So what we did, goal. So I set some goals. I need a structure and I need a document process to support our loose culture. I need to partner with the right people and really clarify the roles people had in this. And I need to build resources to make the process as easy and transparent as possible. So there's no magic bullets on this stuff. Grassroots processes aren't just like, boom, we're going to say we're going to do this and get a bunch of people talking about it. It's going to happen. The way we started was me and a core team sat down and took several months to write in detail what our process was going to be. So if you remember, we talked about earlier, this has to be, you know, organized approach. Grassroots efforts aren't, you know, chaos in and of themselves. It's really important that you start with a clear statement for yourself of where you're going with this. Not all of the members of the grassroots effort have to be this organized, but you need it because you need to give them messaging that you're expecting them to carry on for you. I'll even go back to the example I used about setting up for this session. I gave people content, and that's exactly what I saw posted by the person who put it on the listserv, as well as what Educause posted on Twitter. So you really need that in place to actually help move this along. So again, we sat down, we built out all this documentation really to ensure that consistency of message. It provides a resource when one of us wasn't available to speak to a point, and it really becomes a tangible representation of your objective. This document I'm talking about here, I'll post on the website if you're curious about seeing that. Next, had to find the people. So the people, like most organizations, we have senior management layer, we have this middle management layer, and we have our staff layer, right? And they're, you know, this isn't a traditional hierarchical organization chart. I think this represents better what our places, our institutions actually look like. There's some bleed between these and stuff. But also, like most organizations, there's these really special folks. See that right there? That really special folk. They are the people that know how to make things happen, right? There's a few of them around. They push things along. They tend to take on more than they're actually responsible for. They're really, you know, the grease, you know, in many organizations. And you never really know where they're going to be, but they're out there. They're just, you know, they're around. And when you find one, you kind of know it, because they're always the person that really is like, oh, how do I? And they're ready with the answer. Or, you know, oh, we need to do something. And then they're the ones volunteering to participate. These people are really important. And when I found them, when I got to Berkeley, I started calling them the Berkeley Fabric, because I knew if I needed to actually get at my organization at all, I needed to involve the fabric, you know, the people that were really connecting everything. So very, very powerful. With this, in their connections with each other, they know how to move things across the institution, up, down, sideways, all around. What's also really important about these folks is if you consider their individual spheres of influence, they look like this. And really, you can touch a whole organization by just engaging a few people. And I think this is a coverage map that AT&T or Verizon would die for with their cellular service. I mean, they got everybody covered there. So another representation of this and how this actually came to be within my institution at Berkeley. So knowing this, what we did is we put together a committee, Project Portfolio Committee. And what we did is we looked for key representatives from all the major divisions within the college. So we have three representatives from each of the following divisions: Student Affairs, Academic Affairs, our Advancement Office, Administration and Finance, as well as IT. And it's really important to point out that IT is one of these arms, just like everything else. So everything we're doing here, we're asking IT to do, as well as those other areas. This committee, and this wasn't on day one, this committee reports to the College Technology Council, which is a member, is comprised of some senior leadership from across the college, and also several of our cabinet members. That committee reports up to our cabinet, right? So when we started out with this, what we started with was the representatives on the outer ring, so the Berkeley Fabric people. We didn't have the PPC yet, really, and we didn't have the relationship to the CTC, the College Technology Council. And we certainly didn't have the relationship to the cabinet. But we knew, because we didn't have that mandate coming from the cabinet down, we had to start on the outer ring and move up and in. So I would mention that not all of the people on the committee are Berkeley Fabric folks. You know, those are hard people to get sometimes, but enough of them were there to really help out with the process. So that's the goal. So cost. So next thing we want to look at is cost. In a previous slide, I just mentioned the Project Portfolio Committee. It wasn't there when we started out with this, and I know that trying to form a new committee, especially if there wasn't organizational support for it at the top, is a really hard thing to do. It's a big political expense to try and make that thing come into being. So what we did is found an existing committee that really wasn't doing anything. You know, it had stagnated, and it was like a bunch of people getting together every once in a while and saying, hey, what's up? You know, what are you working on? And it was that kind of thing. And it was like, wait a minute, you guys get together, you're still getting together, and you want to get together, and you want to get together for some reason. Let's look at making this committee responsible for this process. And so from a political cost standpoint, this was low cost because I didn't need to establish something new. From a tool standpoint, we started with what we had. So Excel, right? So we're going to just start by using Excel, make it pretty light. If we, again, from a cost standpoint, if I said, I need a PPM tool to do this, well, I probably would have got nowhere. I can't ask for a bunch of money to do something that I might do in the future, right? So we wanted to kind of prove that we had a process before we went shopping for that. I will be honest and mention that I had a good web developer, and that was really helpful because that person was able to build, which is really kind of a sexy, you know, list manager. He built this tool for us, helps us ingest the requests, and it just helps keep the list up to date and stuff. So not a ton of functionality at all, very limited scope, but what's there worked pretty well. So it's attractive to people and available to people. So next, actions. So attractive to people, available to people. What we're trying to do is engage people. So what we ask people to do is actually participate with us in developing work plans, which we call our snapshots of 4 months, our four-month project window. So three times a year, based in coordination with the semesters, we release what we anticipate that we're going to be doing over the next 4 months, right? So we sent what we had as our list to our representative and said, please verify that with your area. Instead of us going and trying to reach everybody in the area, we went through the reps and said, please perform this action on behalf of the PPC. We suggested meetings they should have with their areas, like prioritization meetings. And we really had them involved in the iterative development of this plan. So this is the key to the process, really. The process we have is collecting requests, having the areas prioritize them, doing preliminary project definition through a project process we call charters, right, standard project stuff, having them involved in project selection, project scheduling and resourcing, so looking at what we have available to us and turning around and only putting things on this work plan that we feel we can do during that given amount of time, and also just finalizing the work plan development itself by distributing it in their areas. So we really use the reps to help us do all these things. And that process, those elements, are what's in that other document I mentioned. So I'm not going to go into this in detail, that process. This is really more about getting that process in the water. And then wherever possible, we really tried to support our representatives in completing these tasks. So we felt that this would create ownership for them, so they would feel responsible for the process, create a sense of pride in the work they're doing with this process. That was not universal, I'll be honest. And it's interesting to note that these Berkeley Fabric folks I mentioned, the Berkeley Fabric folks took to this thing immediately. Just immediately. It's like, all right, cool. This is a way that I can help my institution forward. Like I said earlier, there are some members of the team that weren't Berkeley Fabric folks, and they had a different story. But anyway, I'll talk about lessons learned a little bit later. So, easy. So, from the easy standpoint, what we did is we reduced the number of meetings, and an example of that is in my administration and finance area, and finance alone, at any given point in time, I might be meeting with the bursar, the accounts payable manager, the director of budget, the VP of finance, all these different types of people, and you have all these individual meetings. Not only was I in there, and were they in there, so that's, you know, five different meetings, but also usually one of their more senior technical people, which ended up in many cases being our representative. So what we said is, okay, representative, you work with those people, understand their needs, and you bring them to us. So what we ended up doing is actually reducing what was potentially five meetings a month with one representative down to one. And if you multiply that by the fact that we had 15 reps, right, that reduction from five to one, that's four, that's 60 meetings a month potentially that we took off people's schedules, including mine. So that was a good thing. We tried to put a really low barrier to entry on this. So I said we built that web tool. At the outset, what we said is, I don't need a ton of detail, I just need to know, is one of the first things we wanted to say. So our web form, very simple to add content to, very simple to put your needs in. And not only did we make this publicly available to everybody around, we also said to many people is, if you have trouble filling out, you know, this is one required field and another optional field. If you have trouble filling out the one field form, don't do it. Send me the email. Use all those other means that we talked about, but we will put it into this tool. So at the outset, we just really wanted to show that everything was getting channeled into this one place and then getting responded to there. That's pretty much on the easy side. And then on inclusive, the thing here is with those representatives, we actually, with those roles and responsibilities, we published them on the website. We actually listed out everybody who was playing that role. So we helped create some kind of identity for them. We showed that we're giving them a purpose, and then we're involving them into this community, which was our project portfolio committee community. We also used a series of individual and group meetings. So we had three meetings here where we bring all the reps together, but then we also have a smaller meeting monthly with just the reps within a division. And so they start to work together a lot more than they used to, with issues that fall under that division. So results. I want to get into results a little bit. So grassroots results. So one of the big things that we did with this process by using this grassroots approach, I think, is that we increased the visibility right away. We started talking about this. We started getting people engaged in it. We started getting people to talk on our behalf in their areas about it. And one of the big early wins that I saw out there that, you know, something told me that this was kind of working was that we have an annual award ceremony at Berkeley. And then for a whole different variety of reasons, whether it's a big project or you're the best employee in your area or whatever it is, we hand out cash prizes. Well, after we put this in place, the first award ceremony, after we put this in place, there was three people that received awards during that ceremony, and their role on this project portfolio committee wasn't even called that at that time, but their role on this was part of the reason why in the nomination statement that they stated, like, here's why this person is doing a great job at the college. Not only do they do this, 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 and this, they also participate on the, at the time known as ASAC committee. That was pretty cool. All of a sudden, we started hearing about it through nothing I did, but through what other people were saying and recognizing that this body existed out there. Engagement of representatives. I found that most of the representatives, you know, jumped right on this and saw it as valuable for them and wanted to see it work. And one of the things that I saw here that happened was many of the representatives, when it wasn't going as we described it was supposed to work, got really mad at me. They were like, why don't you do something? This person over here isn't doing, you know, the job, or this isn't working, or how are we going to fix this? So all of a sudden, it became their process, not even mine. So that was pretty cool. And then adoption of terminology. So again, kind of like the thing I mentioned with visibility, and I didn't realize it's this going in, but one of the really subtle but really powerful examples of this kind of taking on its own life that I really attribute to the way we put it out there is that we started hearing the words we were using coming back to us. So some of the things we called different points in the process. So charters, which are that, you know, definition of a project, our first pass at this, we called them roadmaps. All of a sudden, roadmaps were this term that, you know, were being used on campus, and everybody knew what they meant. Whether they liked them or not, you know, some people were like, oh, I got to do this roadmap. Some people were like, I got to do this roadmap. You know what I mean? But it was there. The word was understood. The attitude associated with it, well, you know, we could do a little improvement on that. But anyway, I think that was a pretty amazing early success. With portfolio management, so we started building these work plans, and I think one of the things that portfolio management has done is every semester since the spring of 2008, we have published a work plan that was built not just by IT, but with the engagement of people around the college, a document that says, here's what we intend to work on over the next 4 months. We have increased leadership involvement. So the CTC, that College Technology Council, has since we started this, assumed sponsorship for this committee, the Project Portfolio Committee. We now essentially report to the College Technology Council, which in turn reports to the Cabinet. Recognition of the need for project management. I'll just put them all up there. People are talking now about the need for project management roles in their areas. We've never heard that in the past. And you're even starting to hear people talking about the need for a PMO. I don't think we're anywhere near mature enough for that yet, but it's interesting to see that those concepts are getting socialized around the college. Foundation for Technology Plan. So this absolutely set the stage for what I think is one of the college's first strategic technology plans. So it's a plan that shows a multi-year view of what, you know, major technology initiatives are out there, which in turn provides context to the PPC for us in our decision-making about what we're scheduling. Very, very valuable, and this was actually recently approved by the Cabinet at the college. That's a pretty exciting development. And then last, it provides data. So data, that's a pretty kind of cool thing, because with data, you can provide information, right? So a couple quick examples. I mentioned a work plan every semester since spring of 2008. So I can show you how many projects we completed by work plan for each of these semesters. So that's a nice little graph, and it's information, right? We can use this to turn around and tell a story. Our story might be this, that using this process, we're getting better and better at project management, and we're getting clearer, we're being more efficient, so we're getting more done with the resources we have. What it might also be is a statement that says, you know, now that we're using this process, more people are understanding the value of participating in it, so we're hearing about more and we're including more in the work plans. So again, I have a story, right, about what this means, but you will now have something, an information set that will allow you to either pursue resources or speak to those things that concern you in your institution. Another example, this one just to have fun. So there's a big project. That was a three-year project. So if you wanted to talk to workload a little bit, here's a big three-year project. Here's another big guy. You know, that one's, you know, about a year and a half, almost 2 years. So you can start to see workload. You can say how much time these things are taking, how much resource we're committing to these. And as we go along, you know, keep adding. This is actually all data right from our database, our product repository. And so that's what we've done since we've started using the project portfolio committee. That's all the projects that have come through there. Again, could be interesting because on one hand, it might say early on, you see a lot less of those little dots and more of the big, big dots. Well, that might mean, right, when you're doing something really big, you should have an expectation that we're going to be less able to do a bunch of the little stuff. So when I go planning in the future, and I know I got a big project on the horizon, and we do have a couple coming very soon, I might be able to use this to say, you know, I really got to lessen the load on all that little stuff during this time. Another thing this might say is, well, our adoption of the process is really great, because not only are people putting in the big stuff, they're putting in the little stuff now, too. They're seeing some value in it. So again, the point is that there's data there, and you can start doing something with it. It's also important to recognize that this is a couple of years into this. When I started this, I had no data. I had no numbers to share. So I would advise not walking around saying, I'm going to be able to present all these graphs and give you all these metrics when you start into this, because you don't have them. You know, it's only now that I'm able to start, you know, building something where I can actually mine this information. So, lessons learned, okay? I would say that if you're setting out to do a process like this, prepare yourself for a really, really huge time commitment. It's just, it's the messaging and re-messaging and the work involved. It just really, really takes a lot of time, especially if you don't have that mandate from the top. You need champions. You need to be a champion yourself. You can't get distracted from it. You have to keep moving forward on it. People aren't going to agree with you at all times. People aren't going to like this. People don't like, you know, process all the time. But it really does provide a benefit, so you're really just going to have to put the blinders on and stay focused on that. Focus on the benefit, not on the process. One of the biggest things that, I'll even say mistakes we made at one point in the process, is we started really talking a ton about the process, like you need to do this then, or this is how it works, or whatever else. And that's not how we even sold it going forward. When we started out, we said, this is going to provide value, this is going to provide you a benefit, and here's how. But when we started saying, like, oh, you can only have X of this, and you have to do this in this order, people stopped listening. You know, they strayed from the process. So again, really, sell the intent and not the steps. That's a big thing. Know the real goal. So what I mean by that is, when I started out, I said my original goal that I presented to you was getting this process in place. Well, that wasn't really the process. What I see now is what the real goal was, getting that leadership support through the CTC and the cabinet. So I could have said, my goal is to get a process in place and quit a few years ago and it would already be gone. The goal wasn't getting that. You know, the process was a means to actually getting support for these concepts in the institution. And then the last thing, don't don't leave issues to fix themselves. Another thing I found myself doing is that, you know, we got these, we were asking for volunteer effort, we were asking for people to contribute. They weren't being told to do this stuff by their management. They weren't being told by the college's management. But they were getting really frustrated when things weren't working. So if there's an aspect of the tool that's not working, or if there's an individual that's part of your committee that isn't doing the work that the other people are doing, I'll admit to waiting too long to fix those things because I didn't necessarily feel I had the authority to. But out of respect for those other individuals, you really do need to try and jump on those things and address them. I guess last, what I wanted to do is take a quick look at our organizations and see where the fit for this kind of approach is. So I used the survey early on to make the point of the grassroots thing, but here's another view of that. Here's the actual survey responses I got. So what I asked people is, tell me about, you know, two things. What's the level of support in your organization that you have for these types of efforts, project portfolio management? And then what's the level or maturity of your process in your organization? And so, first of all, if you're in this red crew, right, this is about 19%. If you're in the red crew, that means you have a high degree of support and you've got a well-defined process. And if you're in this group, you should not be in here. You don't care about what I'm selling at all. This is a group that, if you have this, use it, right? You have that mandate. But what you shouldn't do is pretend that you don't and try and do something as a, we're going to do this bottom-up thing to try and get everybody bought in. This is actually, the term for this is astroturfing. And so when people talk about fake grass, right, fake grassroots efforts, astroturf. Swear to God. The other word for this, I call this manipulation, and it will get you burnt, right? So, all right, how about these folks? You got a high degree of process, but you kind of don't have all the support. There's a role for that here, for this approach, for really engaging people and, you know, really using this to get your process understood better and to gain support for it. All right, so these folks, you've got a high degree of support, and you don't have much process yet. Well, in that case, I would say you just got a project there. You just got, you know, that's got to be assigned to someone, and you got to pursue that. You get some consultants in, or you do it yourself, whatever, but just make it happen. But here's the sweet spot. This is 60% of us, right? 60% of the people that responded to this said that we've got a low degree of support and a low degree of process. And this is really the sweet spot for this kind of thing. This is where I would contend that using an approach like this can provide some value for you. I think that's it. So at this point, questions? Yes? So the biggest things that you're doing at first, I think, in this is project ingestion, really being able to say how big the list is. So the simplest number one thing you can do is show the number of proposals out there. So we use that all the time at the beginning. I mean, we've got over 1,000 things in this tool right now, and we can state, you know, how much is coming in. The other thing I think, you know, kind of showing it there a little bit is how many we're completing by work plan. And then really asking the question to, you know, you're trying to tie again to leadership, you know, starting to ask the question, like, is this good enough for us? One thing I'll mention is what it also having that tool, I can tell you right now that over the course of the period I've showed you, we're completing 17.75 projects per work plan. So that's essentially just over one a week. This also lets you ask the question, like, can we even if we said we wanted to do more of that, can we handle that rate of change? Not just in IT, but within the organization. So those are some of the easy ones to spot. Yes? So the question being is, who are the little white dots, right? Who are those bright, shiny lights, right? Who are they? They're random. So there's our associate vice president for academic affairs is one of them. And then we have staff members. I mean, it's really random. And really what we looked for were people who had worked cooperatively with us in the past trying to move things forward, but also people who just had demonstrated over time that they just had a really great understanding of the college and just showed passion for getting things done. You know what I mean? Open-minded, you know, just those types of folks. It's kind of that little network approach. You know, you start with a couple people you know, and then you engage them to say, like, who's going to help us make this happen? You know, so I've been at Berkeley for 10 years. So we started this process about 4 years ago now. So I had a good sense of who some of the folks were, but there's definitely players that are now representatives that were brought to us by other representatives. Does that get to it? It's there's no, they don't wear badges. You know, it's tough. Yes.
How long did it take you from the sign up committee or whatever you call it in the beginning?
Too long. No, it was about a year. Okay. It was first sitting down in a new role that I had gotten at the college and saying, what am I going to do about this? So kind of figuring it out myself. Then working with that core team to build. And, you know, when we built that document, that represented several months of work, first by saying, engaging them and say, what do you want to do? You know, really, again, this, it wasn't like go put PPM in place. It's like, what should we do to get this stuff in control, leading to this concept, building the document, and then engaging the people and starting to change the face of that committee. So about a year. It's a lot of time. My boss is in the office. Did I seek permission? I mean, there's... No. To be honest with you, I, you know, even where we're at today, because it didn't come, I mean, there's risk involved in this. So that's one thing to keep in mind. I might have found I needed to seek permission. And if I found that, it probably wouldn't have been good, right? And there's also, because it's not... We're not being told that's what needs to be put in place. At any point, it could all disappear. Like someone else could say, no, actually the approach we're taking is this. So there's risk. There's a lot of risk. Gentlemen, weigh in back.
What constitutes a project? I mean, not everything that you get requested is going to make it a project.
So what constitutes a project? So the way we think about projects is we try and categorize things into tickets, which are, you know, something's broken and you need to fix it, right? That's the maintenance type of request. And then we said anything else that actually, the way I put it is anything that touches, that requires one of my staff to put time on it or changes an administrative system in any way or introduces a new one, that's a project. That's something we want to track in this system. So we want to know about everything that's out there that's impacting other things and other things, including our people. So kind of broad, but that's where we started. Ken. In my group, it's 23. In IT as a whole, I think we're just under 60 or so. Again, we're 4,200 students, a combination of, well, faculty and staff of probably about 1,200, I think it is, in that range. So we have 4,200 students. Between faculty and staff, we have about 1,200 total. And I would say that's probably a 60-40 break or so. So probably 400 to 500 staff. So did we have any difficulty with our definition of projects and getting them into the system was there confusion between tickets and projects and stuff? And you asked this, did we have that at the beginning?
Yeah.
We still have it. I mean, honestly, it's hard. It's art, not science. And a lot of times something comes in as a ticket and we find out, oh, that's actually a project, or the other way around. So, it, we get better over time, but that, I think that'll always happen. Yes.
in a more permanent way. Actually, that document that describes our process will be posted, and I'm posting this as well. So you can have these things. On the EDUCAUSE site, if you go into the conference website where it lists the presentations, I can attach it right to that. So it'll be sitting out there. And give me a day or two.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Well, if there's nothing else, I just want to say thank you very much for coming. Enjoy your afternoon, and see you around.